Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by James Dowse.
I'm back, everybody.
He's back, everybody, and Josh Brown.
Welcome back, James Dowse.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
What a beautiful, beautiful time. James Dowse, how have you been? How's life?
Great.
What have you not been doing?
I have some time off, boys.
Oh, it's good, isn't it?
It's lovely.
Did you have a nice week off?
Yeah, I did.
What did you get up to, you cheeky scamp?
You know what I did? I played and completed Toy Story 2.
Nice.
Ooh, very on the nice. PlayStation 5,
on
no less.
Yes, the PS5 version.
Best version.
Great game.
Yes.
Really good.
How does it hold up in 2022?
Well, you know. All right. The camera is abysmal.
Yes.
I should have spent this time playing Sekiro, you know, Dark Souls 2, but no, Toy Story 2.
He's got priorities.
Is it the best Toy Story game?
Yes, but Toy Story 3 is very close.
Yes.
Toy Story 3 sandbox mode, incredible.
3 is good. There was a Mania, which was on the Kinect on the 360, where you had to, like, fire pies at the screen.
That doesn't sound good.
Nah, that was good.
A mania?
Yeah.
Speaking of a mania, we thought we'd talk about best video game adaptations in honor of Mr. Jeff Keighley himself announcing a best adaptations category for the upcoming Game Awards. The idea being that it's anything that came from a video game initially, in terms of franchise stuff, in terms of IP stuff, and whether that turned into a TV show, a movie, books, comics, whatever the best adaptations are. So we thought we'd round up. We've got 3 picks each. I don't know what Mr. James Dowse or Mr. Josh Brown's picks are, nor do they know what mine are, and we will do the 3 best video game adaptations of all time, and we'll do 1 absolute stinker each, which I think we should do first. However, I think we should open the podcast talking a little bit about The Last of Us, because The Last of Us HBO got like a 15-20 second clip or something.
Yep.
As part of an HBO montage thing advertising HBO Max and what's coming out soon, with including Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey as Joel and Ellie.
No, this was another Friends spin-off. I would watch that, though.
Cheeky little Joey. And I think, yeah, so what do you guys think of that? Just very, very quick impressions of the old Last of Us.
15 seconds wasn't enough to gauge a feeling. Mm-hmm. The dialogue was interesting because it was very one-to-one with the game, wasn't it?
Where it's literally the same.
Yeah. Which kind of in my head is just like, is this just going to be a carbon copy?
This just the cutscene?
Yeah. Is that the film?
The TV show? Josh knows it. Well, the world knows how I feel. The world partitioned by, if they listen to this podcast, I don't need The Last of Us HBO show when I've got the game. Josh, what do you think?
I really need it. I need it with all my heart. And that 15-20 second teaser, it did a lot for me, but it also raised a lot of questions. I thought, you know, again, we're analyzing such limited footage, I didn't expect Pedro Pascal to sound exactly like Joel. I didn't know if his version of Joel was going to be very similar to the games. I didn't know if he would put his own spin on it, but that line delivery combined with the line itself, like you said, you know, one-to-one from the game. I thought the brief shot of him running with Sarah at the start of the apocalypse looked incredible. Mm-hmm. The kind of like a kinetic cinematography you'd expect from the filmmakers of Chernobyl. I loved the brief image that we got of Nick Offerman as Bill.
Yeah, taking the mask off.
That is such a great piece of casting. cast in it. And what makes it even better is that he wasn't the original choice for Bill. Right. I can't remember who the original actor was, but they had to drop out. Nick Offerman came in. And I'm like, that is perfect. That's so good. It looked amazing. However, again, if I have a nitpick from 15 seconds, is that it looked
you
too...
You picked those nits, mate.
It looked too clean. I wanted the characters to look a little bit more dirty. I wanted the sets to look a little bit more dirty. Mm-hmm. And again, a very minor nitpick in the grand scheme of things. But for an apocalypse, I needed a bit more griminess on these people.
Mm-hmm. My friend, who is a very big Last of Us fan, he said it looked very amateur. In that it didn't... No, I don't mean that in a negative way. Oh, he didn't, sorry. He meant it in like it just looked perfect.
Yes.
It looked like it was...
Like handheld calm and yeah, very thrown
it,
in.
It yeah. just looked like, as you said there, it didn't look rough. It didn't look like the Last of Us feel to it.
I think
obviously
it's
that will be later in.
But. Yeah. I always think it's interesting with any like big old, you know, streaming service where they have to charge for 4K subscriptions and stuff like that, how grimy you can make a production, because you'll get people who are buying giant 60-inch TVs to get the most out of these shows, and then they don't want to watch something that has film grain applied to it, or they don't want to watch something.
Game of Thrones' is final season where it's all black and you couldn't see
anything. Oh, yeah, exactly. And it's just like, I feel like they always, look at something like Paramount Plus, like the Halo show or whatever, like that looks so ugly and too synthetic and too clean, and Wheel of Time on Amazon look way too clean. And I think that it's, and the new Lord of the Rings for me looks the same, looks way too clean. So I think sometimes that's a pitfall that shows fall into. I will say for The Last of Us that, yeah, Pedro Pascal sounds perfect, which makes me wonder what Troy Baker's role is going to be, because I know he's in the show.
Yeah.
He's a new character, but I assume that he'll have to be someone completely different now. I know he was never going to be Joel, but it means that he won't do the same voice or whatever. But yeah, as far as like replicating the energy of Joel in that scene, it's great, and it's literally scene from the game and with the exact same dialogue, so it does seem promising.
It really does. And I suppose what you guys were mentioning there about the color grading and stuff, yeah, I don't want this to look like a Halo TV show. We might touch on later on. And I think for as, you know, bad as the later seasons of The Walking Dead got, for instance, I think that show made a really genius move right at the start to shoot on 16mm film to give it this kind of grimy look. You know, it might not look great blown up on HD TVs, but the world looks gritty. These characters look like they're sweaty and having a bad time.
They look like they live there.
I kind of just, you know, want to hope that these actors look like they're having a bad time on The Last of Us. I hope they weren't while shooting it, but I want it to look a little bit grimier. Gritty. I mean, even Chernobyl, you know, that'll obviously get a lot of comparisons because they're the same set of filmmakers and stuff. Like, that was a good-looking show, but the color grading, the look of it, it felt oppressive and apocalyptic. And The Last of Us from the couple second clip that we got didn't quite have that, and I hope it does in the final thing, but obviously we're ways off. There's a reason we only got like 15-20 seconds
very little.
It's not coming out until next year.
I think that they need to show, I mean, I think that they're trying to walk a line between like, this is a blockbuster TV show, this is The Last of Us, oh my god, it's in TV form, and then also it should kind of be a more subdued production and maybe have a more indie movie feel that will be closer to The Last of Us in terms of the scrappiness and everything. Speaking of scraps though, we should do a roundup of the worst adaptations and then get into the best ones after that. So in terms of the worst one, I'm just going to fire this out there. I think it might be Netflix's Resident Evil.
That's
a prime pick.
I can't even argue against it. It was on my shortlist because there are so many bad adaptations. And I think, you know, if we're talking adaptations that completely get the source material wrong, that's up there. If we're talking about completely incompetent filmmaking, that's up there. If we're talking about terrible acting, it's up there. It hits all of the tick boxes.
That's the thing. It's like it loses the soul of the IP it was borrowing from, and it's also a bad thing in itself. That's kind of my twin category for most of this.
I had a moment when I was scrolling Netflix last night, and I saw it, and I realized I'd only watched six of the seven episodes. I never leave anything. And the fact that I invested so much time and didn't even watch the final episode, I think, for me personally, speaks.
It speaks volumes.
Voices.
It speaks many voices. My shout is very much Resident Evil Netflix. I think that thing is an absolute tire fire.
Right.
But James Dallas, can you one-up me?
No.
Interesting.
I think I agree with you there. But here's my dilemma.
Do it.
I adored this show, and then I realized that it wasn't really as good as it could have been. That was the Cuphead show.
Oh, okay.
I loved that. I was so happy when it got an announcement, but it missed out on the art style of the game. The rubber hose, is it called? The rubber hose animations.
Yes. I don't think that's necessarily that's the thing. I was going into the Cuphead show wanting it to just be a TV show version of what is the best parts of all the trailers and things like that. And then when they did it, like, it kind of looks a bit like Rubber Hose, but it's more like old school.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's more like regular just kids animation, like Warner Brothers stuff.
But if they did it the old style, it wouldn't have ever come out for like 20 years.
There'd be some
years.
Way to algorithmically AI it. Well, then don't, for me, then don't do the Cuphead show. Like, it has to have that style. That's what it is.
It was good. It was good. I wasn't personally a fan of the voice acting in it. I just didn't think that, well, they're voiceless in the game, so it was hard to, whatever. But they just didn't sit with me. I watched 10 episodes, I think. And then there's another.
Way more than I did.
Yeah, but I couldn't get through more.
Is it fair to say that's your perhaps most disappointing adaptation?
Yes, I'd say that. Instead of bad, I'd say disappointing.
Josh Brown, your worst pick. I know as well that you have some sort of quote-unquote banter pick in here, but I think it's a positive one.
We'll get to those.
We'll get to that one. What's your worst pick?
Dude, there's so many worst picks. I need to shout out three. I won't spend time on all three, but Mortal Kombat Annihilation, very bad. All the Uwe Boll adaptations, like Blood Rain, Alone in the Dark. I think he did The House of the Dead as well. Far Cry. They're all abysmal, but it almost doesn't even feel worth talking about them because they're not, they're barely movies, and who cares about Uwe Boll films? So I want to talk. It's another Resident Evil property. It's Resident Evil The Final Chapter, which is the final Paul W.S. Anderson Resident Evil installment. I'm a big fan of that series, which I'll get into when we talk about our best. But I think that might be even worse than the Resident Evil Netflix show, because as a F you to anyone who cared about those movies, it just is a huge one. It sticks the middle finger up at all continuity, any kind of coherency with the characters and their actions from previous films. It completely disregards a cliffhanger ending from the previous film and then kills some of the most iconic characters in the series off screen. It is terribly edited. One of the most worst edited films I've ever seen in my life. I had to watch this film twice. I didn't have to, but I wanted to because it was that bad. I don't often hate things with burning fire, but I hate that film, and we'll get it into any list that James Dowse has probably reviewed on the What Culture Horror channel that I can, because I just I can't stop talking about it.
I know
it,
the plot of that film because of you.
It lives rent-free in my mind.
I feel like at least that, I could be misremembering, because I've seen all the Resident Evil movies, the Paul W.S. Anderson Resident Evil movies. I feel like at least that final one had some characters in with like, with game-appropriate costume.
It mostly killed them all off is the thing. Like, it brought back Claire Redfield. That was about it.
Is like, the final chapter the one with Wesker where he's darting about the place throwing people in big tubes?
He's doing that a lot. Afterlife and the one afterwards, the fifth one, I think it's called Retribution or something. That's the one that has Leon S. Kennedy and Barry Burton and all of that, all of those characters in it. And I think Jill Valentine comes back as well. But the last one kills all of those off screen. And then you have Mila Jovovich's character. You have Wesker as the final villain. And you have the Red Queen who comes back as like the big bad. It's very bad. It's
at least there's more Resident Evil in there than Resident Evil Netflix.
I'm just saying. I genuinely don't even think there is. Like, you got Raccoon City and it's destroyed. Yeah, you got a few characters. But honestly, the Wesker scenes that harken back to Raccoon City in the Netflix show are more authentic and a better adaptation of the source material than anything in the final chapter for me.
That is fair. Either way, we can agree that Resident Evil has been privy to two out of three worst adaptations from our
I realise I've got one more.
Go on.
The other day, I completely forgot this is a video game adaptation. My girlfriend made me watch a film. It was Battleships.
Why are you watching Battleship?
Rihanna's in it, man.
I almost passed out there. I laughed so much that my vision went a bit sideways.
No, my girlfriend sold me on a film because Rihanna's in it, isn't she?
Yeah.
And she was just like, yeah, Rihanna's in it, so we watched it. God, it's bad. It's so bad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's more like based on a board game, but near enough.
I mean, near enough. What you're saying is you were on a high, you thought you were on a winning streak, and then afterwards you sort of turned said, you sunk my battleship.
Yeah.
Because that was your enthusiasm.
Someone does say that in the movie, though. Right? Yeah. I remember, actually, I turned positive for the battleship new IP or whatever the hell you want to call it, the revival of it back in 2013 or whatever it was. Whenever that came out, that game was kind of cool. That game was like a first-person game thing where you would like call in airstrikes as if you were playing battleships, and I thought that was cool.
I didn't play that game.
I like the idea. There was a demo for it.
Well, that's what I did with my week off. I watched Battleships twice.
Bit of Fortnite, bit of Battleships. What else do you need? Speaking of nothing at all, we'll go into the best adaptations. Now, I have three serious picks. This sounds sarcastic. It's not. My actual three picks for the best adaptations, video game adaptations, in human history. I only have movies for these. I don't have... Well, you can kind of... We'll see. I want to start, though, with number three, Silent Hill. first Silent Hill. I don't remember the name of the dude. Christopher Gans, I think, is the name of the director. And the reason I say that it's the best, or one of the best adaptations, is that it nails the cinematography of Silent Hill. Everything just looks like the game. Mm-hmm. And I love the way that they shoot certain scenes as if the camera was just sort of starting like a game camera, like starting like the isometric stuff, and then zooming in and finding, I think it's Rona Mitra, the main character, the actress, and finding her, and then sort of going on that discovery, what is Silent Hill, what's really going on. It's more just the cinematography, but I feel like they nail the feel of being in Silent Hill as it was in Silent Hill 1 and 2.
Talking about movies that get the aesthetic right and have a little bit of grime to them, yes. That is one that absolutely nails it, like you just said. You know, if you look at that compared to its sequel, mm-hmm. which arguably tried to be more authentic,
I never saw that, funnily
to
enough.
The source material, it's very, very bad. but that kind of like lacked that griminess. It lacked mm-hmm. the atmosphere that you absolutely need for a Silent Hill movie. And it's my number two, Scott Tilford.
Oh, beautiful. Also, well. Radha Mitchell is the person I was trying to think of. Not Rona Mitra, carry on.
There we go. 100%.
Give me your number three.
My number three. Can I do an honorable mention first?
Yes. Yes,
my honorable mention is the Resident Evil Extinction movie tie-in book. these things... I must have been the only child in my town who requested the Resident Evil novelizations into my library, because I would read all of those. And yeah, this is...
I'm in a stunned silence. That's incredible.
100%. Like, okay, so Resident Evil Extinction is a movie, and I read the novelization of that, and it was one of the books that got me into books. They were really well written, man.
That is the book.
Good expectations, no.
Nah, that sucks, man.
Hobbit, no.
The Bible. Have you heard of Resident Evil Extinction?
Have you
Extinction?
Read words? Well, I have now. Resident Evil Extinction.
And I've granted not read this book in a long time, but I thought that was great. And I just kind of wanted to put a call out to anyone who may have read those novelizations, because I've been living with this knowledge and this fandom for years now. And
this knowledge.
If you want to know why I love Resident Evil so much and I'm a diehard fan, it's partly because of those books, I'm not going to lie.
Because you discovered reading.
I did.
Resident Evil.
I'll tell you what, the novelization of the first movie was pretty good as well.
I used to read novelizations. I remember reading the Men in Black one back in 1996 or whatever it was. I used to like that a lot.
Indiana Jones 4, I read the book for the film.
Before the film? That's so good.
What was that? That was a very nice noise. I remember getting so into Force Awakens when that was coming out that I read that stuff as well. Extra little plot details as to Kylo Ren's mindset in that book that aren't in the movie.
Yeah. That's the beauty of it, right? That was what was great about these Resident Evil adaptations, because you got like a little bit more backstory, you got more flashbacks, and all of that was really cool. Because there are some cool characters in those films.
Yes, Mr. James Dallas, one of your three.
Well, that was your honorable mention.
Oh, it was indeed. I do apologize. Josh Brown, your actual number three.
This going immediately after the honorable mention is going to look like I'm making a mockery of the entire concept of this podcast. But I need to preface this.
Jeff Keighley, the most serious man in gaming history. I can't believe you're doing this.
He is.
The Dorito Pope.
I'm going to preface this fact that this isn't a bit. This is my real opinion.
Okay.
My third most favorite video game adaptation is Super Mario Brothers the movie, starring Bob Hoskins.
I knew you would do this.
I did.
Yeah. I'm going to do this because it's a genuinely great film. It has nothing to do with Super Mario Brothers the property.
No,
is probably an insult to anyone who grew up with those games. Yeah.
But do you know when they asked for the word adaptation, you went, nah.
I went, nah.
I went, nah.
You know, like it's kind of like based on a true story. It's like based on a thing that you might know. We've used some names.
A fever dream.
I didn't grow up, as we have established, with Super Mario Brothers or really even Nintendo. So I had no love for that property. So when I eventually got around to watching this film, I didn't care that they completely changed everything and made...
Just everything.
That's just what a Koopa looks like.
A Koopa looks like.
He's got a
suit
on.
Completely made the tone wildly inappropriate and had a lot of these 90s executive on cocaine decisions in there from an aesthetic standpoint. However, as a standalone movie, as an enjoyable piece of cinematic imagination brought to the screen.
Yes.
It owns, man. It's really cool.
I can't. James Dallas?
Bob Hoskins, do you think, is the Mario? Is that Mario to you, Bob Hoskins?
He is. Yeah. You know what? That's the definitive portrayal of that character.
Yeah.
Chris Pratt can try, but he's going to like get slapped by the ghost of Bob Hoskins because he was so good in that role.
I don't know if that's true, but human history will look back on the fact that only two Marios will ever exist, Chris Pratt and Bob Hoskins.
I guess
technically Charles Martinet, but not in live action. So it's,
I love the idea as well of in 100 million years time when we have all died three times over and the aliens have descended, they find a little relic and it's Super Mario Brothers the movie on DVD, and that's all they understand of human history. I would be fine with that. I think that would be really fun, and quite rightfully so.
Go on.
What our legacy should be as a species.
I love that that movie was so bad it made Nintendo not want to work with the West at all in a live action capacity for about 3 decades, and then they're finally getting back around to it now.
I was told of a story about this film the other night, and admittedly, me and my friends had a few drinks at this point, but we were talking about Super Mario Brothers, the movie, because I always talk about it. And apparently, when Bob Hoskins realized that he was playing a video game character, he was in such despair that he couldn't believe that he'd just gone from playing King Lear to Mr. Mario himself, up and down plumber.
He said that he only did it because his son wanted him to do it or something.
Yeah.
Is this not like Bill Murray and Garfield? Like,
maybe.
Just got it.
It is, but Bob Hoskins is more of a legend, man, which is why. Okay. You know.
Yeah. I can't, in the words of Tom, what's that dude called that was in Men in Black? Lee Jones. I cannot sanction this buffoonery, but I appreciate you bringing this to the table. Mr. James Dallas, one of your three best adaptations.
I'll quickly do an honorable mention. Tomb Raider.
The original one. Yeah.
Very, very good. That was one of those ones where every single boy I knew had a poster of Angelina Jolie as Tom whatever.
Tom Cruise.
Did you not have that poster? And then, but my actual number three.
Tom Croft.
And this is very niche. Neither of you two will ever hear it, but Professor Layton had a movie. Right.
I love you find a way to bring Professor Layton. It's like favorite cakes. Nah, Professor Layton had a cake.
Professor Layton and the Eternal Diva was its name.
No way.
And I was however old I was when it came out. Uh-huh. But it was very much one of these, like you said, there was Japan exclusively, and enough people in the West was like, bring it here. So we did it. And I was probably the only person in England who bought it. And I remember forcing my grandma to watch it with me because she also liked Professor Layton, because that was the target audience, kids.
That's
and
so
grandmothers.
Cool, yeah.
And it was very weird. You just solve puzzles whilst watching the film.
Explain this to
yes,
me.
Yes, explain
this to me, please.
No. So I think one of the first puzzles is like Layton stuck in a church, for example. And then...
He always is. When's that man not stuck in a church?
He's at it again.
He's got his matchsticks. Put them in order, get him out the church.
And then, so like you'd look at the camera would like pan to the sky and you'd be like, how do I get out of here? And you watch along and you're like, you could do that.
Are you pausing the movie
like talking to yourself, being like, you could quite easily do that,
right.
Professor Layton.
Yeah.
And then like, he's like a Dora the Explorer thing where he's like, yes. And then he does it.
How old were you at this point?
12.
Okay. So it wasn't like last year, was it?
No. So it was just Dora the Explorer, the movie kind of thing, but with an English gentleman.
That's a really nice idea.
I dig that because I was a huge fan of Blue's Clues when I was younger.
Yeah,
and it sounds very similar to that in terms of its vibe. I quite like that idea of interactivity, especially in a kids' movie. How can you adapt game mechanics in a movie like that for children? They'll just want to play the game.
True.
But here, you get a version of it where you can play along with Mr. Layton. I have no idea who this guy is, to be honest.
It's called Herschel, Josh.
I've never played this series. I have no idea what the dude looks like. I don't even know what you're talking about, to be fair.
Have you ever... What? You've not seen him playing Professor Layton?
I might have seen him before. Who knows? Herschel, I don't think I
am. Is this man who wears a top hat and he's got an assistant called Luke, and they go on adventures and they get pickerats and solve puzzles?
Now, here's the thing, right? Ever since we started talking about Professor Layton in this podcast, and James Dowse repeatedly brought this series up. Yeah. I honestly have never dared to Google it outside of these walls because I don't want to spoil the illusion of whether it's a bit between you two against me or whether it actually exists.
Can you describe your version of Professor Layton? What does that man look like?
He's got a top hat.
Yep.
He's clean shaven. He's about 25. He's got a suit with tails.
That pretty much is Professor Layton. Him,
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah. I think you might have come across this character in your travels.
I may have.
People wanted him in Smash. People wanted him in Smash.
Maybe that's where I
throw matchsticks at people. Yeah, it'd be good.
He's not the... Who's the objection guy?
That's Phoenix Wright.
Phoenix Wright from Ace Attorney. Yeah. They
had a spin-off together where it was Leighton versus Phoenix Wright, or Ace Attorney, or whatever it's called.
That might be it.
Yeah.
Oh, you need, there's so much a world of possibilities, Josh Brown.
To my actual point, though, the film, great film. The cutscenes in the games were the best point. Like, that was incredible cutscenes on the Nintendo DS, and then they made a feature-length film, which was very good.
That was very, very good. That's a legitimate, actual pick. Yeah, not thanks. Like Mario Brothers, Josh Brown.
I don't know how you compare these two picks, and you don't see that they're the exact same.
On the
that
day of my
offensive.
Daughter's wedding.
Scott.
my second pick, again, serious pick, Pokemon movie, 1998.
Yeah.
Okay. Literally, that was almost my number one, but it's not. But the original Pokemon movie, I was going to have Detective Pikachu, and I thought, if we're going down the route of all time and we're talking about Pokemon adaptations, it's got to be the original movie.
Here's a question. How old was you when that came out?
Oh, man, I was 9.
So did you cry a lot?
I didn't know, because I saw it with my mum, because all my friends at that time was like, oh, we've grown out of it. No, we don't want Pokemon. And I was like, it's really cool, guys. Yeah. And then my mum was like, I'll go and see it, because I think Pikachu's cute. And I was like, thanks, mum. And then we went and saw Pokemon. And then, so I just sort of watched it. And then that bit when he sort of dies at the end, I never believed for a second that Ash was dead. So
one day he turned to stone.
Well, he turned to stone. But I was just like, there's no way he's dead. And then when Pikachu cried on him and brought him back, I was like, ugh, you've not thought that through. That's not how that would work at all, Pikachu.
Hang on. Is this the origin story of the Scott Telford persona being annoyed by that plot development?
I wasn't annoyed. I was glad he was alive again. I was glad he was alive, but I just thought they would have done something else. Like some Pokemon creature could do something. They could destone
him. Obliterated Ash.
Mewtwo was terrifying in that film.
He was scary.
It was so cool. Yeah. But yeah, that first movie, I think it's because it was such a cultural event. I still remember it very vividly. I remember going to see it with everybody and seeing Pokemon on the big screen for the first time. That initial rollout of Pokemon was just incredible. Like, everyone had the games and everything. I was always a red kid. Other people had the blue one because they're weird. Red was the best one. But still, I'm putting the Pokemon movie up as one of the best adaptations of all time. You know, however, to cut you off violently, at the beginning when I said I could swap a movie for a TV show, you could have the Pokemon TV show if you so please.
Which run?
Oh, the original one. All the way through, you got all the Butterfree stuff, all the way through to when Ash finally gets Charizard under his control. Season 3, 4?
Okay, so is that when they're in Johto?
Oh, I don't remember. Whatever the original Kanto run is.
Right, okay.
Like all that stuff in the 90s.
See, I watched it
before Gen 2, because that's worse.
See, I watched Gen 1 through Gen 3.
Oh, you stuck with it way longer than I did. I was
that's
a Gen
when
1
I grew
kid.
Out of it after 3.
I was always a Gen 1 kid.
I do. Funnily enough, I never played the Pokemon games when I was young. I had no patience for them. I hated them. But I love Pokemon.
Too busy in the library, innit?
I was too busy in the library reading Resident Evil and requesting Resident Evil Extinction. However, I was a huge Pokemon fan because I loved the TV show. I loved Pokemon the movie. Admittedly, haven't watched that film in like 20 years, but used to watch it every night in VHS. And I didn't cry, but I got very emotional. And like you said, you know, Mewtwo in that film, like when he first is born, essentially, and he's talking about the purpose of life, maybe informed an existential crisis I would have myself 20 years
later.
That's
your origin story.
Maybe it didn't. That is my origin story.
They remade it.
They did, but they made Pikachu talk.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are we doing,
boys?
It was
all in like the chibi style.
What are we doing? Yeah, I don't mind the chibi style necessarily. Shout out to Tekken Bloodline. But I do think that making Pikachu talk is weird. Because he's never talked before. He's going to talk again. It's not Detective Pikachu. What are we doing?
I think you're probably right. I have no opinions on Pikachu talking. I didn't even realize until right now that he didn't talk.
He says his name.
Pika. Pika, Pikachu.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't say like, hey, how you doing? Have you read that book yet? No, he's got one thing and one thing only.
So, can you remember when Tom and Jerry spoke in the 90s in that film? That was a good film. I
saw that at the Warner Brothers cinema, which Warner Brothers don't have cinemas anymore.
Yeah, because it had songs and stuff in it. It was so good.
Yeah, what a time.
You had such a good childhood. Seeing Pokemon the movie, seeing Tom and Jerry in the cinema. I'd love to have seen all of those movies in the cinema. But
it was a nice time.
I did not.
Josh Brown, give me your... Well, your number two is Silent Hill. Anything you want to add to that? We breezed past it. I thought maybe we'd revisit it, but what you said before is also still stands.
Yeah, 100%. I can't remember if I talked about the actual narrative and how they adapted it.
You did not.
I don't think I did. But I know, obviously, you know, way back when we only got a few gaming adaptations every few years, I know there was a lot of backlash to the fact that they changed a lot of elements from the game and that it wasn't a one-to-one adaptation. You swapped some of the characters around and whatnot. But ultimately, I do think that makes for a more engaging movie storyline, and ultimately, as long as you get the ethos of what Silent Hill is and the kind of, you know, oppressive nature of that with a macabre twist at the end, I think it's completely fine to change things. And as a narrative, I do think for the most part it's pretty good. You know, it's great visuals and a pretty good story. In as far as video game adaptations go, that's sometimes all you can ask for. You know, that's the best you can hope for.
Yeah, I remember thinking it was the first of video game movies to get it right. Like, obviously Pokemon does predate it, but there's that whole curse over video game movies. Nothing's ever good enough. And I know that Silent Hill, I think, was 2003. But I remember watching that and just thinking that they got it right. It didn't feel badly made. It felt like it was solid. It respected the source material. And like you said, it brought like its own elements to the story and everything, which I like the way that it goes. Like, I get that it's more of like a one-off thing. It doesn't really relate to the wider lore. But I quite like that stuff. Jim Stouse, your second best adaptation.
See, originally I was going to say a wrong answer.
A wrong
it's
answer.
Not right, it's not right in any way. I was going to say Wreck-It Ralph, but that's got nothing to do with anything, has it? Because that wasn't a game first, was it?
It was not, my friend.
But there's game characters in it.
There are video game characters in it?
Yeah. So,
if you want to make the case that it has the best representation of Ren and Ren?
Ren.
Ryu and Ren Ken's Stimby. Chemistry.
So we've got Tom Raider. We've got Ren.
Thomas Raidsman.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I'm not going to say that. I'm going to instead say Detective Pikachu, going on what you just said. I really enjoyed that film.
I love that film.
The use of, the visuals of the Pokemon were really good. Like seeing them in a 3D, HD, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Mewtwo, once again, was actually scary at the end of that. They just know what they're doing with Pokemon, I think, and I'd love to see a sequel of that.
I love how much Blade Runner is in Detective Pikachu, which I didn't see coming at all. I love how like dank and neon and drippy the city is, and like I love all those wide shots where you can just pause it and be like, there's like 40 different species just in that frame somewhere. It's the best representation of the version of the Pokemon world that we imagined when we were kids.
Yeah.
What if the real world had Pokemon everywhere when we were like 6 or 7 or whatever, or 9 in my case.
I thought Ryan Reynolds might have been like a bit too, being like, oh, he's just going to be Deadpool, it's Ryan Reynolds in it, but I thought he was actually quite good in it.
I think like Justice Smith, I didn't see or hadn't seen him in anything else until then, but that scene where he thinks he's disappointed everyone and Pikachu's trying to like, what a sentence, Pikachu's trying to like restore, make him happy again. I think that's an incredibly well done scene. Like Justice Smith acts his ass off and it's incredibly well done. Detective Pikachu would have been my initial go-to, what my brain initially said was number one, and then I knocked it away because there were other things.
It's a great movie and it's a movie that I didn't think I would enjoy because at that point, you know, I'd kind of not grown out of Pokemon. I just hadn't really thought about Pokemon in terms of my life for a long time. But obviously, you got such good reviews. People were talking about it in the office. I sorted out. I had the same reservations that James Dowse had about Ryan Reynolds because, you know, even now he's just playing versions of Deadpool.
Yeah.
No matter the movie he's in. But yeah, I thought that was a pleasant surprise. And if you were a diehard Pokemon fan, I imagine you just got, like you said, Scott, so much more out of that film from it being a realization of what you wanted a Pokemon movie to be, a live-action Pokemon movie to be when you were younger, and just kind of like a celebration.
I just wanted to see Pokemon in the real world. When I was a kid, I used to get legitimately bummed out, gutted, annoyed, and sad that Pokemon weren't real. I was so annoyed they weren't real. Why couldn't they just be real? Why can't why can't I go home and there'd be like a little Chansey walking around in the house going like, here's your tea, or whatever he says.
What a life that would be.
I just want it.
What a life.
With a giant egg sticking out of an apron. That's all I want.
Torture, man, for those people. Serving Scott Teal.
Any, they don't care, that's what they know. Any, and they can't talk about it because it's fine. Any humanoid Pokemon is also an absolute freak to society though. Anything that walks and talks.
Like Machamp, Machamp.
They're a little bit better, but yeah, Mr. Mime though, or yeah, they would totally qualify, or just...
Hitmonlee beating you up every night.
Oh, Hitmonlee's really cool though.
He is pretty
cool. He can beat me up, that's
It's like, you know, in the Muppets, obviously you have most of the Muppets like Kermit the Frog and whatnot, but then you also have the tall Muppets that are like life-size.
Mm-hmm. Serial killer.
And it's like, get these freaks out of here, you know what I mean? I imagine that's the same for these Pokemon.
Yes, so that one would smother you.
Yeah.
In, with love, but you would die. My number one pick, the absolute best adaptation in video game history, serious pick, not sarcastic, is Castlevania on Netflix, which you predicted I would say, but you could not be more correct. Castlevania is absolutely immaculate. I just watched that show. It's so good. The thing is, like, they, in terms of the overall, like, structure of it, season one is, like, 4 20-minute episodes, and then season two blows everything way out and becomes Game of Thrones, and it's like, here's all these other families, all these different other power struggles that are going on because of the vacuum that's kind of created by what happens at the end of season one. And then season three, the creator, Warren Ellis, was, like, literally, I'm going to spend a season setting up even more stuff because they'd already secured season four. And then season four is like the most beautiful bringing together of all those elements to do one of the most satisfying bits of TV you can ever see. So I recommend Castlevania in its entirety. But if you don't have time, just go watch season one. They didn't know they were going to do all the rest of it initially. And if you just have 20 minutes spare, which I know you do, go watch Castlevania season one. Even if you just watch the pilot, it's immaculate.
So is that show over now? Is season four the end? So that's like a complete package.
They're doing a spin-off now, but the main show is done.
That's cool. I like that. It wasn't, you know, extended beyond its means. James Dowse.
Perfect.
Are you ever going to watch the show?
No.
No.
I might after your
recommendation. It's made for the people who
don't never had any connection to the Castlevania series.
That's more than fine. The way that they write it and the fact that they focus on one character, Trevor Belmont, flesh him out, and his whole journey is very much made to be an entry point. Like the whole point of the franchise was to sort of go, "Hey, by the way, this whole lore exists. Let's go do stuff." Warren Ellis as well had never played the games either. He just wrote a whole bunch of stories and then mapped it onto the characters, the world, and then kind of made it fit kind of thing. Castlevania is absolutely stellar. That franchise, or that series, never gets enough talk.
My knowledge of him mostly is via Smash Brothers, because he was in Smash Brothers, was he not?
I think it was Warren Ellis.
No, he was, yeah.
You mean Alucard?
Belmont. Mr.
Oh,
Belmont.
Trevor Belmont, yeah.
He was in Smash Brothers. That's the only...
I think that's Simon Belmont, but yes.
Is that same not the family, same man?
No, there's there's a whole bunch of different protagonists.
No,
you are right. It's the Belmont family hunt the Dracula, and then Simon Belmont's in Smash.
Okay.
Trevor Belmont, I don't believe, is in Smash. Trevor Belmont's the dude in Castlevania. He was in Castlevania 3. He's the father of Simon Belmont. It doesn't matter at all, but you should all watch Castlevania. Josh, what's your number one?
My number one is, it's not as high quality as the Castlevania TV show.
What is?
However, I do think it's genuinely good, and it's Resident Evil, the original Paul W.S. Anderson movie.
Ooh.
And I need to clarify that I have, seen other things that aren't Resident Evil. There's just so many of them that, you know, they've got to be talked about. They are the best and worst of the video game adaptation subgenre, in my opinion. And this first movie, man, is really, really good. I watched it when I was younger. I continue to watch it like every year. I think in terms of the zombie movie canon, even if this wasn't called Resident Evil, it would still be a film worth watching because it's a genuinely good zombie movie and maybe like one of the last of its kind. Like the way that they portray the zombies in this flick is like head and shoulders above the way that the zombies are portrayed in the other Resident Evil movies. I just think they get something inherently right about them. I love the setting of the Umbrella Underground Lab. The cinematography is really cool. It's got Mila Jovovich who runs up the side of a wall and kicks a zombie dog in the face. The action is great. The characters are cool. The actors are cool. It's a cool movie. Very early 2000s, but in the best possible way. It actually reminds me, right, of the first Blade film in terms of its aesthetic and its tone.
And the gore.
Yeah, and the gore. They're kind of cut from the same cloth, and I like that style. I like Blade 1 over Blade 2, for instance, because of that style, and it's why I like Resident Evil 1 over Resident Evil 2, which Apocalypse, which I still think is pretty good, and Extinction, which I think is pretty good, but 1 has this kind of uniqueness to its style that I just think it's great.
I remember, like, because one was, like, the first time they'd done a live-action Resident Evil, especially with that kind of budget. And it has, I mean, that laser corridor was, like, went down in, like, horror film history or whatever.
Yeah.
I love the whole scene on the train towards the end with the liquor. Like, it does have iconic moments to it, even though that overall franchise is kind of panned. But, yeah, that first one is a hell of a pick. I think that does stand the test of time.
I think it does,
pretty
too.
Pretty well.
Yeah.
Jim Stiles, the best video game adaptation of all time.
Collectively.
You're telling the world.
To the world. Yes. Cover your ears, Scott, is Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Not mad about it at all. I loved Sonic 2 so much that I binged all Sonics for about 2 months.
Here's the thing with that film. I realised during the cinema, I had a smile on my face the entire time. And I've not had that for any... Well, I guess Detective Pikachu, I was happy with that one. Yeah. But no other video game adaptation I've thoroughly enjoyed as much as Sonic 2.
You know what? I think like that's all you want sometimes. Yeah. You want to be sat in the cinema and you want to have a smile on your face, whether you're watching a R-rated horror movie, whether you're watching a Universal-rated kids film. You just want to kind of feel the same feeling that you have when you play the games. And I imagine, James Dowse, that's what you got while watching the sequel. What my question, as we've talked about these movies a couple of times, what makes the second one better than the first one? Why is the first one not on your list, and why is the second one coming in hot?
The first one had a very big involvement in... It felt very early 2000s with, like... Do you know when old films used to have, like, a round table of executives talking, and there was, like, the military and stuff?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I love that trope, yeah.
I hate that
with a giant cigar.
Yeah, it's that like, kind of stuff. Looney Tunes back in action at it. Of course, that film is like my go-to. Yeah. But I hate that gimmick, and it was in the first one a lot.
Right.
Because it was always just them discussing. But Sonic 2 felt like it was made for the love of the fans.
Yeah, I think for me, like I had this weird like reawakening thing with Sonic where I watched in Sonic 2 when he gets to go fast. I was like, this is so cool. Yeah. He's doing fast things. I like that a lot. And then I sort of remembered how much I used to love it when I was younger, and I went back through the entire franchise of Sonic. And so I think for me, Sonic 2 is a great pick. I think that it's very, very solid. The only thing with both the original one and the second one of the new potential trilogy is the human stuff. If you ditched all of it, it wouldn't matter at all. I hate the human stuff. And the weird pivot they do between Sonic 1 and 2 where, it's not James Franco. What do you call the dude?
James Marsden.
James Marsden. He's like his bro in Sonic 1. They're like road tripping together and they're friends.
Yeah.
And then in 2, he's like, you're like a son to me. And I'm like, he's like, thanks, Dad. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, if you just told me thanks, Dad, I'd be like, what? Like, that doesn't work at all.
Oh,
like,
I'm going to start doing that.
And you've done it before. But I think like that whole thing of I way preferred them as bros and as bonding that way as opposed to doing this weird he's taking him in as a surrogate son thing. I thought that was a really strange beat to go with. So yeah, I would just gut the human stuff out, especially the wedding scenes, which you love them, didn't you?
I did.
That's
I
the X Factor
that.
In you loving that stuff.
That was the cheap laughs, wasn't it? And that had me laughing.
Yeah. I just kept screaming internally, I don't need this. It's a Sonic movie. Like, why is this idiot?
Yeah. But Tails was great in it as well.
Knuckles is so good.
And Knuckles
I've got a little
good.
Cheeky Knuckles figure upstairs.
Until he turned into an idiot at the end. But that's...
Yeah, he becomes Drax at the end.
Yeah.
He just literally, like, yeah. Just a go-to...
Post-credit sequence, we see Shadow.
Yeah, we do
that
see Shadow.
That means that with the trilogy.
That's when Josh Brown comes in.
That means I'm going to have to watch
both. You like
2006
Shadow.
All over again, mate.
Big
third,
Shadow
the third
fan.
One's coming, isn't it? Next year or the year after?
Either next year or the year after. I don't think we know if... I was going to say Robotnik. We don't know if Jim Carrey's in it, though. Like he said,
he's tired, hasn't he?
He doesn't want to play him anymore, but then it's like, well, you clearly are a big part of this.
Yeah,
but he's kind of buried at the end of 2, so I don't know whether he's still alive. There's more to be done.
He will be.
They revealed that bonus scene thing on the DVD where it shows like Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles doing stuff together. And I'm like, that's exactly what a Sonic movie needs to be. Just kill all the humans.
Isn't there a Knuckles TV show coming out?
I believe there
or
is.
Or is out or something.
I don't know where that would be. Paramount, I guess. I forget who owns
Paramount.
Yeah, maybe on Paramount Plus. I think there is an Idris Elba Knuckles TV show. Once again, we're talking about Sonic. It's 2022.
Big shout out to Sonic Boom, the TV series as well. That was all right.
Oh, that'd be such a shout. Maybe I'll just scrap my entire list. The Sonic Boom TV show. No one, Josh, I'll lead you to this.
Josh is already off.
But it's so good.
It is good, yeah.
The Sonic Boom TV show is immaculate and no one cares because it's tied to one of the worst games of all time. But it's so funny. It's so well written. It's so self-aware. It's great.
You know when cats bring in like dead animals as a as a tribute to their owners?
Yeah.
Scott once sent me a compilation of Sonic Boom best bits and it was the human equivalent of that. It was got...
Did you click on it?
An entity that I love. I did. I skimmed it. I watched the bit with Shadow, didn't I?
You did? That was really good.
Yeah, well...
When Robotnik's like, get him a chair because he's the coolest guy in the franchise?
Well, it was like a dead bird. You know what I mean?
He loves it. Josh can't stand meta stuff, so it's not going to be for you.
Did you really smile or anything, though?
I was watching a pretty stony face, but I mean... it was all right. It was fine. Look, it was one up for me, Jim.
The man doesn't like Saints Row 3. I can't... Where are you supposed to go from here with Saints Row 3 or 4? Anyway, I don't even know how to wrap this thing up. This has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. The best adaptations are Castlevania and whatever you guys said. Pokemon.
Professor Layton.
Professor Layton.
Eternal Deviant.
Super Mario Brothers, the movie. Very good.
Yeah.
Neither he nor there.
Kind of. A lot of Pokemon. A lot of Resident Evil in the bad category. But this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by James Dawes.
Thanks, bro.
Anytime, brother, and Josh Brown.
See you later, Dad.
Catch you next time.
Son.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. Are you winning, son?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.